Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2010. Lecture 4, delivered on September 1, 2010. The title of this lecture is Open Market Operations and Interest Rates.
Today, open market operations and interest rates. First, before I go into this, why would you possibly care about interest rates? And let me give you just a simple window on what we'll be doing as this course moves along. Suppose that you are facing a business decision framework in which you have three projects. Project A, Project B, and Project C. The return on investment to Project A is 16%. The return on Project B is 10%, and the return on Project C is 6%. Now, you are going to decide whether or not you accept these projects, any of them, one of them, or some of them. Suppose that the interest rate environment at which you could borrow money in order to invest in projects were 4%. Would you take on project A that yields 16%? And not just, oh, hell yeah, because you've got yourself a differential there of 12%. Would you take on B? Well, sure, you're going to get more than it costs you, the cost of the capital for it. 10% is the yield, and the cost of capital is 4%. Now, this is fairly simplistic, but it really does convey the idea. Now, suppose, would you take on C? Sure. As a matter of fact, even if C were yielding 4.001%, I would take it on. But suppose that the prevailing interest rate environment for projects of this risk class rose to 8%. You would certainly still take on project A because you will get more out than it costs you. You'll take on B, but when the prevailing interest rate environment has risen to 8%, C is off the table. C is off the table. As the interest rate environment is rising, you are actually cutting off your business activity. That means that your profits would go down. That means that the jobs that you have available, hiring would go down, and the economy would suffer as a result of all businesses making the same decisions that you were using the same decision calculus. Now, suppose in a really ugly scenario, interest rates rise to 12%, you would cut off B as well. You are compressing your business investments as the interest rate environment rises. It matters what happens to interest rates. Interest rates are actually, to a large extent, at least the overall macroeconomic environment of interest rates, is beyond your control. What is not beyond your control is the decisions you make with respect to investments in your business as a result of the interest rate environment that you're facing. But there's something else going on here too, a little subtler. And I'm almost tempted to ask you, do you see something else going on here? But it might be a little early on, but I can kind of tease some of the idea out of you. What's the relationship between expected return? And remember, all of these are expected returns. These are going to be in the future. You don't know these are going to yield this. This is what you expect based upon your best analysis. But what's the relationship between expected return and the risk that must be taken in order to expect that return? One of the most fundamental principles of finance. The greater the expected return. Go ahead. Bingo. The greater, if you want, if you expect a higher return, you have got to take on more risk. If you want a greater expected return, you've got to take on more risk. If you work at McDonald's, you shouldn't expect much. Well, burger and fries, sure. But if you want more than that, you're going to have to take on more risk. I mean, I'm not recommending that you take on as much risk as the assassins in Pulp Fiction did, but, you know, you can make a decent amount of money. You can ask... You go out on dates, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, girls, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Look... I mean, you can take a low-risk approach and ask a girl who works at Wendy's out. Or you could take a higher risk and ask some incredible... I'm not recommending Lady Gaga. You might be surprised by what happens. But, dude, listen to me. But you're taking a greater risk. But you expect more out of it. Yes? Okay. This is the way life works in general. I'm being a little facetious there, but in your whole life, you want more... You've got to take more risk. It's not going to be handed to you on a silver platter. Well, maybe it is, but you got to expect that you're going to have to take risks in order to get something more. So I want you to look there, since I've got you and I've been trying to embarrass you, and you're not turning blushing or anything, so I'm proud of you there. Okay, now, what's happening to the risk profile of this firm as a consequence of cutting off projects as interest rates rise?
Not giving you enough opportunities to make
Well,
money.
Not giving you enough, but what's also happening as far as, do you see that the average risk of the portfolio of projects of the firm was, what, around 10% or something like that? 16 plus 10 plus 6 divided by 3? What's happened to the risk profile now? What's happened to the expected return on the firm if all it has is project A? It's a high yield. So what would that mean as far as the risk of the investment portfolio goes?
It's more risky.
Yes. You see what's happening to this firm as interest rates are rising? It's not just that the firm is contracting in terms of its business opportunities. It's also becoming a riskier firm. The only project left essentially is a Hail Mary. That's what. That's all that's there for this firm is a Hail Mary. Take the risk, hope to God it pays off. So interest rates cause not just the business to compress its business activity, but in the process, it actually pushes firms to become riskier as far as a portfolio of projects goes. That's just the reality of it. And that also, by the way, in a larger framework, is one of the reasons that you will see business failures as interest rates rise. Yes, they are losing projects, so their profits are contracting, but they are also becoming riskier, which means that there is a higher probability of a failure in the business environment. So you see that this interest rate stuff that I'm talking about has real meaning, real impact on you as a business person out there. Now let me take you back. I sort of tried to get this moving the last class, but it was getting close to the end, so it's best to just do it now at a little more leisurely pace. Remember I told you that the Federal Reserve has control of the short and, to a certain extent, intermediate term, interest rate environment, the real interest rate environment. Now they have three tools: the open fractional reserve ratio, discount rate, and then the most powerful other tools, the one that they use every day, day in and day out. It is called the open market operations. The open market operations. Now, as a business person, as you become more attuned to looking at business news, and you're in that process now, I think at least to some marginal extent, you're beginning to open up to looking at business news, you will at times see activities of the Federal Reserve. You will see they might mention the Federal Open Market Committee met, or this Fed governor said, or that Fed governor said. I would pay close attention if a Fed governor who was one of the current, a Fed bank president, one of the 12 Reserve Bank presidents, were to say something. That would always be of interest to me. He's saying, for example, we had the president of the Reserve Bank of Dallas who was saying some things that were a little bit on the tough side about inflation and all of that. Now, the next thing I would be interested in is that Fed Reserve Bank president sitting right now on the Federal Open Market Committee? Because if he's sitting there, that would mean that he has a vote on the direction of monetary policy. So, we have the Federal Open Market Committee. It meets regularly 8 times a year, but it can also... FOMC. It meets regularly 8 times a year, but it can meet more often than that. It can meet on otherwise. Now, the FOMC comprises the 7 governors and 5 Reserve Bank presidents. 4 of them serve on a 2-year rotating basis. 1 of them has a permanent seat. The one that has a permanent seat is the governor of the Empire Bank, the one in New York. The former president of that bank is now the Treasury Secretary. His name is Timothy Geithner. He was much criticized for his failures as the Reserve Bank president of New York, when New York was at the epicenter of the financial crisis in 2008. So he is not a popular man among some. I won't say which way I go with him, although he is an ass. FOMC makes a decision on which way they want the money supply to move. Now, first things first, the price of money is interest rates. Let me be a little more. First of all, put the price of money is interest rates. Now, let me be a little bit more specific. It's not really a price, it's a rental rate. It's a rental rate. So the more technical statement would be the rental rate of money is interest rates. And let me be a little more precise than that. The rental rate of money is an interest rate, a specific interest rate. But I wouldn't say that real interest rate so much as I would say just keep in mind that there's like a base substrate interest rate, and the price, the rental rate at any given time on money will be that interest rate. So if I were to say that the supply of money increases, going back to your dark days in economics, if the supply of money increases, if the supply of anything increases, what happens to the price of it? Go down. So if the supply of money is increased by the Federal Reserve, what happens to its price? So what would you say? If the Federal Reserve is going to increase the supply of money, what do you expect interest rates to do as a result? Good. I know that was almost a pedantic walk there. I was getting to say the same thing over and over. But it's really just an application of a simple supply and demand dynamics kind of issue. The supply of anything goes up, its price goes down. So if the Fed wants to drive interest rates down, its job is to pump money into the economy because that increases the supply of money, decreasing its price, which is interest rates. Conversely, if the Federal Reserve wanted to bring interest rates up, the first thing that it would want to do is it would want to drain liquidity from the banking system. In other words, contract the money supply. Because if the supply of anything goes down, its price goes up. And in the case of money, the price is interest rates. So if the Fed wants to push interest rates up, it is going to have to draw money out of the system, bleed the money out of the banking system. That's the entire goal of open market operations. Now, we'll go to the scenario that has been happening for about 2 years now as the Fed has tried to keep the economy from dying on the vine. The best way to get the economy going again, as far as the old gospel of Keynesian policy goes, you get interest rates down, because that makes businesses accept more projects, hire more people. So the Fed has been trying to push interest rates down for a couple of years to spur the economy back to life. So let's look inside of an open market committee meeting and say, well, how would that actually work in real terms of what the Fed does? The FOMC is going to make a decision. We want to lower interest rates. One thing that it would probably do is it would send a signal to the markets that it wants a low interest rate environment. The way it would send a signal to the market is with the signal tool, which was the discount rate. It would say, all right, we'll lend money to banks at a low interest rate. Whatever the discount rate is, they might shave a quarter of a point off it, shave a half a point if it's really dramatic. Or they might just leave it the same. That might be enough. Just a signal, we want interest rates to be low. Their signal would be the discount rate. That would, of course, make the business community kind of happy right there. Okay, the Fed is telling us that it wants a low interest rate environment. That'll make us happy. That'll make us kind of look at those business projects with a little more favor. Then to put teeth into it, they're going to actually have to add liquidity to the banking system. And that's the term we use. They add liquidity to the banking system. Now, I'll take you over here and give you a little bit of terminology. Bank money, and this is a little bit simplistic, but it's actually not that far off the full thing. Bank dollars swirl in a giant pool called the federal funds market. Now, this money is a reservoir of the money of the banking system. Each bank has its contribution to this. From that Federal Reserve pool, they might lend to each other in the overnight funds market. From this pool is drawn the strength of their Tier 1 capital, at least part of the strength of their Tier 1 capital, their best capital. And from this pool would, of course, ultimately be be the money that they would lend to you or to a business. So now that is where the banks have their money. So we'll take a typical bank in the system, okay, a typical member bank in the system. Now, in terms of its strongest capital, and it's related to its Tier 1 capital, it will have a balance of a portfolio of highly liquid instruments. Its highly liquid instruments would comprise greenbacks, dollars, and T-bills, which are a very close substitute. Every bit as safe as dollars, every bit as liquid as dollars, except that T-bills can't be lent to people. T-bills can't be, nothing can be done with them except to keep them until they mature. So the bank would have a balance of capital, very safe capital. Some of it would be money that could be lent. That would be this money right here in the federal funds market. And then it would also have T-bills in its drawer. Now, if the Federal Reserve wants to add liquidity to the system, put money into the system, it won't just give the bank money. What it will do is it will rebalance using open market operations. The banks are free to do this if they want. It will attempt to bring more dollars to the bank and give the bank an incentive to surrender T-bills for it. That would add liquidity to the banking system, tilt the bank's strong capital, safe capital, toward money, which the bank would then have to lend out if it wants to make money on the money. So, the FOMC would communicate that it wants to add liquidity to the system to the New York Bank, New York Reserve Bank. Now, at the New York Reserve Bank is the domestic trading desk. That's where the action will happen. Traders at the desk have a portfolio of T-bills and dollars. Now, in this case, as a trader, and I'm going back through a little bit of what I did at the end of the class. I was talking fast then. So, as a trader, you now have the job of dealing with banks. You're going to try to deal with me as a bank. You want me to have money. You know that I, as the banker, have T-bills and I have dollars. So you call me. Okay, tell me what you would do. Would you try to sell me T-bills or buy T-bills from me?
Well, for more money, I want to sell you T-bills.
You'd want to sell me T-bills so that...
We'll buy.
Buy, good. Okay, you're the trader. Good. I think you knew what that was. Yes. So, in other words, if I'm adding liquidity, he's going to want to say, I have a deal for you. I want to buy some of your T-bills. And so I'll look at you and I'll say, I like my T-bills. I like my T-bills. You know, I'm not going to sell you any. What did you offer me? $970 for my T-bills? Bite me. Well, he wouldn't say that. He's a bank president. But so what are you going to have to do? Your job is to get me to give up my T-bills. What are you going to do? You just said you would buy my T-bills for $970. What will you do?
Yes.
If you want me to sell them, what would you do to the price?
Well, I'd lower the price.
You'd lower the price. If you wanted to buy them from me, what would you do?
Check out the price.
So in other words, if you want to buy T-bills from me, if you want me to give up T-bills, you've got to offer me a better price, a higher price. I'm not selling you my T-bills at $970. That's chump change. Then you would say, how about 975? How about 980? That would give me an incentive to say, sold. I'll sell you a T-bill. That's a better price. That's a higher price. Hell, I can't say no to that. So in that case, what's going to happen is that you will actually be able to buy from me a T-bill. Bring it into the Fed to your portfolio, and in exchange for that, pay me $980. Now, remember what happened. The original market price was $970. You had to go to $980 to get me to buy a T-bill. Do you remember what the relationship is? As the price of a T-bill rises, what's happening to the yield of the T-bill? Remember I did that last time? As the price of a T-bill rises, what's happening to the yield on it? Goes down. I showed you that in that table. So in other words, by virtue of the fact that you are having to push up prices of T-bills to get bankers to buy them, you are actually driving down the yields on T-bills through this activity. And as the yields on T-bills go down, that would make it easier for businesses to borrow money because all yields would follow down the big government instruments. So there's the first way that you are actually causing interest rates to fall. By bidding up the price of T-bills to induce the bankers to give them up and take dollars in their stead, you are driving the yields on government treasury instruments down, which should have a suppressing effect on all interest rates through the economy. Because remember, all interest rates are based upon the substrate of the risk-free rate. Do you remember seeing that in that one lecture, and we say that's like a T-bill rate? So, effectively, what has happened on this part of the equation, on this thing, and there's another part to this too, is that if this is the T-bill market, and this is the price of a T-bill, and over here is the quantity of T-bills, and you have the supply of T-bills in the open market and the demand for T-bills in the open market, there was a prevailing price for T-bills, an equilibrium price right there. as you start wanting T-bills, you and all the other desk traders start calling and asking, I want T-bills, I'll buy your T-bills. Let me buy your T-bills. That is pushing demand for T-bills out. The demand for T-bills is going out. As the demand for T-bills goes out, as we were talking about, the price of the T-bills will rise. The price of the treasuries will rise. And as the price of the treasury bills rises, that means the yields on the treasury bills are falling. So the Fed is causing the yields on government instruments, risk-free rate, types of instruments to push downward, which should bring all interest rates down because all interest rates have as their substrate that risk-free rate. But there's another thing that's going on too. This is a double whammy. Over here, you see this market right here where I wrote this reservoir? I call that the federal funds market. Now, from this market, the interest rate that banks would lend to each other is called the Fed funds rate. It's sort of like if I'm a banker, I don't want, let me not insult you, but you don't look very trustworthy. But he's a banker. My God, look at that upstanding young stud. So, you see, he would get the best rates if he needed to borrow money overnight. He'd get the best rates. You as a consumer would get a higher rate, but it would probably be based upon what I had done as far as an interest rate for him. So if I lent to him at 5%, that would be the basis. Well, I'll put 200 basis points on for you, 7%. Okay, so the idea there is that if I am trying to see what's happening to interest rates all through the real economy where loans are going on, I would probably be watching the Fed funds rate. Because no matter what happens to you, it's going to be rising and falling with what happens to his rate. Okay? So, in this federal funds market, banks will be lending to and borrowing from each other at the federal funds rate. At the federal funds rate. So, well, let's look at what's happening over here. Suppose that we're talking about the federal funds market. This is the Fed funds rate, and I'll put this as an R sub FF, the rate at which banks would lend to each other, the safest rate, the lowest rate you would see coming out of being commanded for money in the federal funds market. And over here is the quantity of loans, quantity of funds being lent. Okay, so now we had an original demand and supply framework like that. And we had a federal funds rate that had been established. This is an open market rate. It's based upon supply and demand. It moves up and down based upon how much liquidity is in the pool. Now, what did you do when you finally, I agreed. I said, okay, fine, I'll sell you one. What did you do? I sent you a T-bill. What did you send me? And where did that money go? And where does the bank put its money? In that, yeah. So in other words, as he buys T-bills for me, I send the Fed, the trading desk, T-bills, and the trading desk sends me dollars. Those dollars are going into this giant Fed funds pool. So in other words, in supply and demand terms, what's happening is that you and all the other traders have increased the supply of lendable funds. The quantity of lendable funds we can now see has increased from the original equilibrium amount, QE1, out to QE2. Now I want you to tell me something. look at the graph. What's happened to the federal funds rate? Yeah, it's gone down. So the Fed has actually done a second thing. It has pushed the federal funds rate down. It cannot set the federal funds rate. I hear that all the time, even from these pundits on the news. Well, the Federal Reserve set the Fed funds rate today. No, it can't. It'll set a target where it wants to get it to go. So it'll just keep pumping dollars out into the federal funds market until it gets to the target rate it wants, until it pushes the federal funds rate down to the where it wants it to be. And how fast it can get it down there depends upon the sensitivity of the lending environment. In other words, from economics, the elasticity the elasticities of supply and demand. But this is what the Federal Reserve does to add liquidity, to drive interest rates down. On the one side, it's driving interest rates down by pushing down the yields on Treasury instruments. But at the same time it's doing that, it is also causing more money to be available in the banking system to be lent, which means that the banks have more money, therefore the rental rate on money goes down, the federal funds rate goes down, and so all the other rates ease down with it. So it's actually a two-sided hit. Now, how hard is the Fed doing this now? It has been adding liquidity so strongly that it has been effectively able to get the T-bill rate down to somewhere around zero, if not possibly a little negative. In other words, the force of liquidity being poured into the system for at least more than a year now has effectively driven this price up to the point where a T-bill is selling at approximately par, which would mean a yield of zero. In fact, like I said, I know some of the people who work with T-bills. They've been doing calculations at the end of the day where it looked, where they, one of them actually came to me to look at her calculations. She said, am I right? Did I just balance my portfolio with T-bills that were yielding negative? I said, it looks like it. Yep. There have been a couple of times when the T-bill rate has actually gone negative. So, and of course, on the other hand, out here, at the same time, by forcing more liquidity into the system, you're pushing out the supply of lendable funds, which theoretically should make interest rates available for everything from mortgages to business loans go down, which would also, as I showed you to begin this lecture, induce companies to accept more projects, because now, instead of accepting only projects at 10%, 16%, 20%, it can accept projects that have lower returns because the cost of capital is lower to the businesses. As we go through this course, you're going to see that a lot of what I've done here, which seems kind of abstract, almost economics-y? What the hell? You know what I mean. Which seems kind of economics-y, it comes back to bite us over and over again, because in financial management, our biggest job is to know when to say when, as far as taking on new projects goes. As long as we can get money for a project cheaper than what the project will yield us as far as our expectations go, we're going to be happy. It's only when we finally get to a threshold where it's going to cost us more, the money that we use for a project costs us more than we're going to possibly get from the project, that's when we cut off the project. So we can't see the future perfectly. So what we have to do is read tea leaves. And everything I do in this course is going to be about expectations. And one of the ways that we form our expectations is by looking at what the Federal Reserve does. Because at the end of the day, it's running the show as far as these interest rates go. And so we have to know in advance. If we think that the Fed is going to hold the line down on interest rates, then our planning for next year will include projects that would be fairly low yield. But if we think that the Fed is starting to show signs that it's going to get scared and have to bring interest rates back up, then That tells us a lot about what we should be thinking about for next year. Maybe that project that yielded only 3% isn't such a good idea, because by the time we begin to start that project, interest rates might be too high for that project to be viable. So we have to care deeply about what the Federal Open Market Committee does. And we also have to look inside to see what the consensus is and to see if the consensus is strong. Right now, the consensus at the Fed is that they are going to have to keep interest rates low because the economy is so fragile. They're just going to have to keep doing open market operations where the traders buy T-bills from the banks and then the banks have more money to lend. But the risk of that is that as you push money into the economy at a rate in excess of the real growth rate of the economy, what will happen inevitably, and I told you this last time, that's right, inflation. That's what causes inflation. We are dancing with the devil. He's being nice now, doing a nice little tango. Later, it's going to be the dance from hell because we have poured so much liquidity into the economy. Sooner or later, it will come back. And the Federal Reserve is going to have to start draining liquidity as fast as it can. But as it drains liquidity, interest rates are going to go up, and then you'll see companies starting to cut off projects, and we could very well slide back into a hard recession on the rebound because of this power with which the liquidity had to be drained back out of the system. So that is where what we face. And if I'm calculating this right, let's see. You'll be graduating about 2 years, 1 to 2 years. Yeah, that'll be about right for when the Fed has to start draining to stop the inflation spiral. Yeah, so you'll be going out into a hellacious recession. Now I'm going to tell you something, a dirty secret, before I finish for today. Trust me, it's kind of worth it. If there's nothing else I can do for you, I can make you cynical sons of bitches. Let me show you what banks... Now, I'm not saying they do this. Well, yes, I am saying they do this. But I'm not saying they do this. I want you to notice something. There's a player in this that I haven't shown you. It's the government which actually issues the T-bills. It's the government that issues the T-bills, right, at the Treasury auctions. They are the borrower. These T-bills are used by the Federal Reserve as a tool. That was why in 2001, we were running budget surpluses. We had started running government budget surpluses. T-bills weren't being issued. The Fed was out of business with open market operations. And that was why, in 2001, then-Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan went to Congress and swore to God that we were in a recession. There was no recession. Swore to God, with other officials of the time, that we needed the largest, most deepest tax cuts, longest-term tax cuts in history, because that was the way that we would start running federal budget deficits again, and then the government would start issuing T-bills, and then the Fed would have its power over the economy again. It was one of the most transparent ploys you could ever imagine, but no one seemed to want to say, you say there's a recession, and you say we need these huge tax cuts, but that's going to drive us back into budget deficits again. That means that the Treasury will start issuing T-bills again, which will put you back in control of the economy again. No one said that at the time, but it's very obvious in retrospect that's what was going on. So we went from running budget surpluses that were rising year over year over year, to the point where we started running those massive budget deficits that have now gotten to the point where we're nose-bleeding into the realm of trillion-dollar or plus deficits every year. But I want you to notice something. The Federal Reserve can go to the Treasury auctions and actually buy government debt. That's the way, essentially, the Federal Reserve pays for these federal budget deficits. It just prints money and goes to the auctions, which is another source that will cause us to have inflation later. But there's something else going on here. You see this bank? You sold me a T-bill. So now I give you money. I paid you money for it. You're supposed to go out there and put that money in the federal funds market and lend to businesses and to individuals, get this economy going again. Okay. You've got that money and you're trying to think about what you do with it. Let's say that the prevailing price of is $980. You got $980. This is on a T-bill. Price of T-bills. But you see, the federal government is so badly in debt that it's running treasury auctions all the time. So within a couple of weeks, the treasury runs another auction of T-bills. Okay, if the Fed runs another auction of T-bills, what does that do to this framework of supply and demand of T-bills? If the Fed suddenly comes up and says, here is a whole bunch of T-bills, new ones, we want to be bought. That's a supply increase. That increases the supply of T-bills from S1 to S2. What does that do to the price of T-bills? You have an incentive, instead of lending that money to businesses and consumers, to go to that auction and buy a $960 T-bill, because you know damn well a trader is going to call you within a month and bid that price back up to $980. Do you see how you don't have to lend the money? You can just keep taking the high price as the demand increases, pushes the price up, and then wait for the next treasury auction, which will flood the market with more new T-bills, which will push the price of T-bills back down. And then you can go and buy that one, and then just wait for a trader at the desk to call you and buy it back at 980. You can just do that and do that and do that and just never, ever actually lend money to one business or one consumer. That's what's happening. That's why this liquidity that is being poured in the market is not having the punch that a neo-Keynesian would expect. One of the reasons is, why would banks have any incentive whatsoever to lend money risky when they can just sit there and with these extra dollars and wait for the next auction, which will push the price of T-bills down and buy a T-bill there and then just keep making the differential off each of these cycles? If you don't believe me, look at the price cycle of the T-bills. Watch what happens to the T-bills. Every time there's an auction, you'll see the price go down, and then it will rise back up as the open market operations kick in, pushing it back up. And then sure enough, there'll be another auction. The price will go down again. And then later, there'll be another treasury auction, and the price will come back up. That's what's happening. So that is what gives you an even deeper understanding. When the Fed says, we're adding liquidity, don't get so excited. Oh boy, we can take on small, low interest rate projects. Maybe it's not such a good idea because there's no impact. Businesses aren't stupid. They're beginning to get the idea that we're not getting any credit. I mean, these banks are not opening their credit doors to us. It's still tough to get a loan out there. It's still expensive to get a loan. Why would that be if the Fed is just pouring money, literally billions of dollars, into the market all the time? It's because the banks are holding that money and waiting for the next treasury auction, which will push the prices down. And they'll just buy more treasury bills and wait for the Fed to buy them back up from them. Now, if that doesn't make you a cynical son of a bitch, I've got some other things this semester. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.